Welcome to the Green Green Grassroots of Football with me, Andy Glover, and still no Ben, and still no Mark. So, even though we are recording 2 weeks later, 5 minutes, Ben is still coaching his girls' side, and Mark is still at the theatre. So, before we go further, I still want to thank our sponsor, Rachel's Bookkeeping, for all of your bookkeeping needs. And amazingly enough, I'm joined again by Simon Aston. Welcome, Simon.
Great to be back again two weeks later.
I know. Thanks for coming all that way down from your house, just quite literally 100 yards down the road from Simon Off Brilliant. I really appreciate it. The long journey you've made to get here tonight after coming 2 weeks ago. Two weeks ago, listeners. Honest. Mm-hmm. You know, I know. It's the magic of the industry, of the film industry.
Magic of broadcasting and podcasting.
Exactly. It's amazing stuff. Okay, so... 2 weeks ago, we discussed weather frustrations, we discussed fixture congestion, and being a new coach. So what would you like to discuss on this episode?
There's a few other things that we didn't even really get into last time. One of your prompts beforehand was around the all the wonderful places that we get to visit and the different facilities that they have when we get there.
Yes.
I think we'll come on to that later because there's a natural order of things, I think. But if we kind of broadly carry on the theme of the episode from 2 weeks/5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Which was around the eye-opening stuff, I suppose, the things that you learn as you go.
Yeah.
There are two really kind of concrete examples. I again mentioned on the last pod about things that will stay with you, and there are two that will really stay with me from really early on.
Okay.
Actually, now I don't know if you've mentioned on a previous pod or not, Andy, but I do remember not long after starting. You advised your coaching team on the under-8 girls that Septembers are your time away from...
I don't think I have. Mark might have moaned about it a couple of times. Whether he's moaned on the pod, I don't know. But yes, and funny enough, guess where I am in September?
I can only imagine somewhere much warmer and sunnier than it will be here. No chance of fixtures being called off for inclement weather.
Nope.
Where you'll be. Anyway, so I remember that first period, the first training session that I was going to kind of lead the coaching on, if you like, mm-hmm. and the first match that I was going to lead the coaching of, both in your absence. We'll start with the first, because the second one leads quite nicely into another thing that would be worth talking about, I think, around the kind of... The rules and the absolutes and the regulations and even stuff to how big is the pitch supposed to be depending on age and all that kind of stuff, which you may well have prepared in advance, conveniently.
Very conveniently.
Very conveniently. So that first session, I remember I did not sleep particularly well the night before. I stayed up really late. And I was
nervous about impressing the six-year-olds.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah, genuinely, it really was.
I'm actually with you. I am.
It really was. It was because you like we've talked about. You quite quickly get used to it. To be fair, and I'd say that to again anybody who's thinking about doing it. And I mentioned on the last pod that of course you're going to feel a bit nervous and a bit apprehensive about doing it. Can I do it? Should I do it? Can I? You do get over it quite quickly, even if you're a really naturally shy person. You really do. But that first one, oh, blimey, as I say, didn't particularly sleep. I was researching, as you do anyway, different games you can play and different ways you can do that with, depending on the number of players you're going to have turn up, and of course this is kids football, so as much as you might prepare to have 14 girls, you very rarely get the exact number that you're expecting.
Of course not.
To turn up, and that often happens at matches as well, let alone at training.
Oh, absolutely.
So that first, I said, really, and that first session on that Saturday morning was lush, absolutely brilliant. And that feeling of relief afterwards, of all that nervous energy that had been built up, was awesome. It really was. But beyond that as well. So not just about impressing 6, 7, 8 year old girls. It was about the parents as well, because there's a real commitment that ties in really nicely to the conversations we were having before on the last pod around the impacts that weather has and the fixture congestion that follows.
Yes.
The parents have to bring the kids.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even me living, you know, within a football's kick of the pitches we play on, we're still committed if I wasn't coaching.
You can't just kick her out the door and go walk across that field.
Absolutely not. As on occasion all parents would have
5 years from now you probably could, but
indeed. But not anymore.
Not at the moment, no.
So there's a real commitment on parents as well. And what parents really want to see, I think, is the stuff you've talked about in previous pods, the passion, the engagement, that feeling that of preparation as
yes.
well. That
yes.
that sense that you're not just kind of turning up and figuring out on the fly. Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, God, did they notice it with me yet then?
No, you've done it. You've hidden it well.
I've hidden it well.
You've
good.
Hidden it really well. But that's a real one. And I remember thinking, I must get there early. I must go over to the container and get out more stuff than I might need. And oh, the footballs. I haven't had the footballs. And then they're not pumped up. And all those kind of things. That nervous worry. And it very quickly went. And it went really well. And yeah, from there, it's gone from strength to strength. But that, as I said, for people listening who might be thinking about doing it, you get over that really, really quickly. And it's knowing that also there's a really good support network around as well. You've talked about mentoring and menteeing before on the pod. And that, I found that really supportive as well, to bounce ideas off of and to, as I was thinking about doing this, I've tried that, but there's another way of doing it that could be better as well. Those kind of things. That's been really, really helpful.
You said training and the match.
Yes.
You've talked about the training so far.
The training.
Oh, the match.
The match. So the first match.
I can't remember. Who was that?
It was Emerson's Green.
Okay. Was that away or home?
It was away.
Okay.
It was away at Emerson's Green.
Which presents its own challenges of if people aren't sure where it is and all the other things.
And I wasn't. So I made sure I got there in plenty of time so that I could.
I bet you weren't first. Lisa first?
No, actually.
Oh.
No.
Oh.
No.
She normally is.
No. But we all know who we've turned up. Last,
which we won't mention.
Those familiar with the under-8 girls' timekeeping will know of whom we speak. No, it's interesting. Made sure I got there in plenty of time so that I could look around a bit nonplussed, trying to figure out where we were supposed to be without parents thinking that I didn't know where I was supposed to be or what I was doing. I could get that out of the way, and then my audience would arrive. It was away at Emerson's Green, and. We had a couple of extra players at that point as well.
Hmm.
I say extra players who were on the roster at the start of the season, but have subsequently left. And
yeah.
you referenced that in some previous podcasts. And we won by a very handsome scoreline. And I thought, well, this is an absolute doddle, this. Which it's obviously turned out not to be. But I'll always remember it for the facilities, because it was the longest grass I've ever seen on a football pitch.
Really?
Really, really, really long grass. And I know that'll lead quite nicely into later conversation when we talk about facilities and stuff like that. But yeah, that first fixture was, again, like that first training session, that nervousness that you start off with, realising that there's so many people who are dependent on you doing it at all, doing it right, being in control, being confident, looking like you know what you're doing. Those remember your first, I suppose, don't you? And they were the first two that I remember really, really well. But also, I remember not being entirely sure that it was 40 minutes.
Hmm.
How that 40 minutes splits up. Is it two halves? Is it 4 quarters?
Can be both.
Can be both.
Can actually.
Indeed.
League rules actually state it can be both up to under 11, I think it is.
Can be both up to under 11.
No, 10. Sorry, 10.
Up to under 10.
Can be both, yes.
So I remember being unsure about that. I remember the player sheet with the mugshots on it. Have I got that in the bag? I've definitely got that in the bag. I don't want to forfeit the fixture because they asked to see it and I haven't brought it. All those nervous worries, which now you just roll up. You broadly know where you're going to be because you get used to the same places that you go to. You learn the rules as you go along. But yeah, I remember thinking, God, none of this was in the course. Hmm. None of this was in the course whatsoever.
So do you want to talk about the setup of the match or locations?
Let's do setups of match first, I think, because then we can do locations and facilities and stuff.
Okay. So just some things. I mean, we may not go any further than this, but so under sevens and under eights, it's 5v5. It can be 20 to 40 minutes. So it can be 20 minutes, it can be 40 minutes. Minimum of 20 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Maximum of 40 minutes.
Right, okay.
Pitches... 30 by 20 up to 40 by 30. And then under 9 to under 10s, 7v7. It can be a minimum of 40 up to 50 minutes. I think the leagues around here play 40 still.
Yeah.
A 50 by 30 pitch up to a 60 by 40 pitch. Then you move up to under 11s, under 12s, they go 9v9. It can be any minimum of 40 to 60 minutes. I think they play 50 minutes. I think they play 50 minutes at 9v9, and it's from 70 by 40 up to 80 by 50 pitches. And then under 13s and under 14s, it's 11v11. Anywhere between 50 and 70, and I think they play 60 minutes. And that's a 90 by 50 up to 100 by 60 pitch.
Yep.
And then 15s and 16s, again 11v11. That's between 50 and 80, and I think they play 80 minute games. In fact, I know the under 16s play 80 minute games.
Yeah.
And there again, it's 90 by 50, but that can go up to 110 by 70. So the pitch can be slightly bigger for the 15s and the 16s. So it just basically gets bigger as you go on. Now, the reason that was done, because when I was younger, when I first started playing, I actually played down here. I played for this club back then was called Somerdale Wanderers before it became Fight Club Colts, Fight Club GFC. It actually was called Caxton Wanderers. It began as Caxton Wanderers in 1968. And 76 we became Somerdale Wanderers when we moved from our location where we were playing sort of in various around Caxton places. We came down to what was then Fight Club and established ourselves on the pitches down here in the old pavilion, which is up the top, which is now houses.
I remember it.
Yeah. We came down here and changed our name to Somerdale Wanderers. That was 1976. And then in 1998, we... it's a contentious thing, but I will say it. We were forced to change our name and our colours. Yeah, we were blue. We were forced to change to red and by the manager of the club, who said, you are going to play here, but if you change your name and your colours, you can play for free. If you don't, you can pay, or I might find somebody else to play here instead. Now, some argue that's not the case, but people around here who were there at the time say, yes, that's absolutely what was done.
Wow.
And in the interest of longevity, we were like, oh, looks like we're now Fight Club JFC and we're wearing red then. And that's what we did in 1998. So we've been, I'm digressing here.
No, but of course the adults still wear red.
Well, we were changed to red to match them. And then when the Fight Club went and we came down to Somerdale Pavilion, that was gone. That was no longer the case. And we took a vote and it was like 5 years ago, we reverted back to our original blue. Mm. Which is why we're now back in the blue, which are our original colours. So when I came down and played here, back for that team, back for Somerdale Wanderers, I was a 9-year-old playing on an 11-a-side pitch for under 11, for 11v11. And there were games where I played right back and I touched the ball 3 times.
Mm.
And that's why the decision was made to go to 7v7 up to under 10s and then 11v11. And that's how it was. So when I started my first team back in 1994, the first team you ran was 7v7. And then the effort, and then you got to 11v11, I think it was under 11s, you then went to 11-a-side. And then the FA did another study. I haven't got my notes on me, apologies listeners. The FA did another study maybe 10 years ago, 12 years ago, I can't remember exactly when it was, maybe even 15. And then that's when they brought out the new thing. I said, right, 5v5, 7v7, 9v9, 11v11, with the ideal being smaller teams on smaller pitches mean you get more touches on the ball. So yeah, and I can see exactly that, because when I was 8 years old playing on a massive pitch, there were games where I had four touches in the hour I played. Now they're getting lots of touches. And I've heard one of our most qualified coaches in the club put on the sort of the coaching group that we've got, was it 4v4 or 3v3? He said they're looking at going down to potentially.
Yeah.
So potentially even smaller pitches, smaller numbers. So that I think it's 4v4, wasn't it?
Yeah, and that 10, 15 years ago, that feels, my memory might be failing me, and someone listening may know whether this link is correct or not, but that feels like it was around about the time when the then chairman of the FA, Greg Dyke, committed to England winning a major tournament in
Qatar. He committed.
Yeah, it was, and of course, and we've come pretty close.
He committed to Qatar,
but that's the same.
Not Qatar itself. But
no,
that
indeed,
year.
That broke. Yeah, indeed.
That year.
But that aligns with, in order to, because of course that was the after you had that golden generation of the Spanish team, and now we can see the fruits of those developmental changes, those structural changes, if you like, that started to happen 15 years ago, because players have had more time on the ball. So the technical ability of our players now at elite level, male and female, to be fair, is second to none.
It is, but I mean, digressing from the subject of this actual
pod, we have slightly,
and I'll digress slightly further. We're still being, I see too many teams still managed by managers who, when it goes into their, when we attack into the defence, it's hoofed. Get rid of it. It's, you know, you don't see that technical ability because they just hoof it long and it's just cleared, because they're still concerned under eights, under sevens, about not losing.
I know. It's,
and it's like, what are you doing? You're developing your players. And this is why I've said consistently, I don't care if they're on the goal line and got three players bearing down on them. I'd like to see them try and pass out. Now, I know they won't, and I'm still trying to get that into them. I did it in my last team, and I fell out with a couple of parents. What are you doing? Trying to teach them to pass. We might lose. And it's friendlies.
Absolutely.
You don't get into a league till under 12. Yes, there's the cup games. I understand that. And I don't mind being a bit more competitive for those. But the only way to teach them is to let them play without fear at this young age. Because if you shout, get rid of it, a seven-year-old, they're going to panic.
Totally agree.
So that's why I've always said that. You see the games we play, and the opposition and the first division, and there are some teams, and you'll see them pass it from the goalkeeper out, but there are other teams, and if we put under pressure, it's just hoofed, and you'll hear that shout, get rid of it. And it's been a particular bugbear, that word. You ask past teams of mine, current teams, people who know me, the words get rid of it are a particular bugbear of mine.
Well, I suffered that early on, because your natural, you've talked about this on a previous pod, the language that we've learned in the past is what comes up when we're in a moment of panic or close to it. The language, you know, it just comes to the fore. I remember using it once, and I remember having a conversation about it afterwards. I haven't used it since. But you're absolutely right. We would rather see that bravery, is the word we use, isn't it, very often. So we'd rather see that bravery from the players, from those youngsters, for better or worse.
Yeah.
For better or worse.
But for me, it's the word, it's the connotation, get rid implies just kick it anywhere, it don't matter what.
Yeah.
If there's another word that you can use is, can you see a pass? Can you clear the ball? Even clear the ball. It's not such a panic.
Yeah.
It's not implying just kick the ball away. To get rid is quite literally give it away.
Yeah. Whereas we want to have the ball.
Yeah, whereas clear the ball doesn't necessarily imply giving it away. And it's just that, it's semantics, I know, but simply using the word clear the ball is nowhere near as bad as get rid of it. You know, clear the ball is clear the danger. You know? And that alone is, and I'm much more happy with clear the ball.
Yeah.
Clear the danger, clear the ball, because you're not telling them just to give it away. But we still, like you said, exactly that. We're asking them to be brave. And there's still some of our girls who are running back towards our goal, and they'll just kick out for a corner, for a throw. And it's just that reinforcing, as you say, of let's not do that. Turn on it. What can you do? We lost it. They've scored. OK, so what? Don't matter.
Absolutely right.
But this is discussing about match length and pitch sizes.
There's, but this is not the first green grassroots of football that has diverged.
Oh no, we do this on, we tangent left, right, and centre on many an occasion. But I mean, yeah, I wasn't Emerson, so I didn't see the pitch the grass length. I have been to a number of places, but also distances from the actual from like the car park and everything else. Mm. So, were you at St Nick's?
I was.
That's an awesome place to go, isn't it?
St Nick's was, to be fair, most listeners involved in coaching or indeed parenting will know where.
I mean, the pitches are lovely,
very nice. But, absolutely lovely pitches,
but
the
18 mile hike to get to it,
extraordinary walk, to the extent where as we often do, if you've got we've got on the best day we've got 14 or so girls signed up and will come along, so at five sides you can have two games running concurrently. Sometimes we'll do one game in full followed by a second game in full. But what I know you really like to do, which is a great idea, is to keep that integration. And
especially
that,
at home.
Indeed.
Especially at home with the chips afterwards.
Absolutely. That whole
away, it's not so key, I think, because we're not having anything out, but certainly at home.
Yeah, indeed. But we like to do the first half of the first game, first half of the second game, second half of the first game, second half of the second game. And it keeps them all there. And we're usually lucky enough to have three or four coaches there at the same time who can keep the other team occupied in the other half and that kind of stuff. And I remember that St Nick's away match really distinctively. At the end of the game, and not quite so relevant, is because there were a number of us who had tickets to Bristol City playing at home, the women's side, and that was a heck of a journey from St Nick's all the way across and through Bristol.
It's beyond Yate, isn't it?
It's beyond Yate, it's Chipping Sodbury.
It's the north end of Bristol.
A phenomenal trek, and we were my car wasn't the only one going in that direction either. So I remember it for that reason, but particularly the distance from the central facility itself. We were going into the final quarter, if you like. So we had those two games running, Game one, game two, as we've just described. And we were going from the third quarter into the fourth quarter. So swapping over sides, effectively. And we always try to do it so that we've got two separate sides so that they get plenty of rest in between and plenty of ball time and stuff. And Marios, one of our coaches in the under-8s as well, he was the designated escort to the toilets at the end of the third quarter, or towards the end of the third quarter, of those players who were going to come on replay again in the fourth quarter. We underestimated quite how far that walk was, because by the time the final quarter was ready to kick off, half the team had gone. Mm. So I only had, I think we had four, and if I remember rightly, we'd offered a spot that day girl.
It was a cup game, so we had to play different squads.
That was it, yeah.
And we'd borrowed one of the under seven girls who was a goalkeeper.
We did, yeah. She was really keen to be a goalkeeper.
And she was really good as well.
She was, yeah. So we ended up in this really difficult scenario where I'd run out of players simply because the toilets were so far away. We played only about 2 or 3 minutes of that final half before Marios came back with this crowd of girls and walking up kind of quite nonchalantly, not realising what was going on. I realised this kind of furious waving and beckoning. Come on, we need everybody back. And then at that moment of realisation clicks when you see that he said, "Oh, girls, run quick! We need to get you back." And they all start sprinting then by that point. Completely different to here at Summerdale at Fry's
Well, you say different to here. You clearly haven't played out on pitch 5 or 6, the 11-a-side pitches. When you're in here and you look out 200 yards across the field, there's the 11-a-side pitch 6 or pitch 5 right across there.
But that's usually underwater, particularly this time of year. But that is that's it. So we're not trying to herd. No, we're not trying to do that.
But for distance, you haven't played at Porter's Head yet, have you?
Only in a tournament
last summer. Yeah, but not the game where you park in Gordano School and then you cross over the road bridge and you walk through a field and you walk around the corner and then there's another field maybe about half the length of the St. Nick's one and it's on the furthest pitch.
Of course it is.
So yeah, and but you've already parked in the school, crossed the road, walked through another field, like where? And it's, yeah, similar sort of distances to that.
Yeah, and these are all.
Teams have to play where they have to.
Of course, yeah. So it's.
But if you get there at half past one, thinking we're at the ground, actually not. You're 10 minutes away.
Words out of my mouth. Yeah, absolutely. And these are all things parents have to.
Patchway School is another one. You get to Patchway School, yeah. You park, and normally Patchway School's got this massive field, and you think, okay, the pitches are in this massive field, but they're not, because this massive field with pitches on has got another field with pitches on beyond it, and you can guarantee the pitch you want is in the other field beyond it, and you spend about 5 minutes walking across the first field to find that they're on the farthest pitch of the next field. So yes, right.
And these are all, as I was going to say...
This wasn't taught on the level one course. You get somewhere out on time and suddenly you've got a 10-minute walk to the pitch.
It's really not. And parents of the girls of every age group will face this, where you have all of life's challenges as well. And then you get We hadn't planned anything on Sunday morning because we were going to have a match, but that's now called off and that's now been rescheduled to Saturday in kind of 8 weeks' time because it's the only slot we've got left. But that means that I can't go and do it, so my partner will have to do the run instead, or we might have to get a grandparent involved. And then in amongst all that, when you do get there, you're still a long way away from where you need to be in some cases. So it's a real challenge.
But wait till they get older and you've got to pick up a player who's at church, but the church is on the edge of the M32 junction 2.
Yep.
So you live here or Whitchurch, as do I, so I've got to drive in to there through the traffic of Eastern basically.
Yep.
Get him, and I've got to get to Portishead. Only to get to Portishead right there, there's now a clean air zone, and my car doesn't have that clean air zone availability. I then got to drive back out and round to get round past Acton Gate, and then up and over and down, and parking Gordano School.
Yeah.
and people are looking around at me like, where are you? I'm on my way, I had to go and get this player. Or I get a call and he's at the church, and we're at home. So I'm 10 minutes drive from here, where we play.
Yep.
Only I've got a 40-minute drive to get a player and get there.
And those are the
that's coming.
It is. Those are sacrifices we make, aren't they? I suppose. Mm. And they are. So they're very much first world sacrifices. But yeah, they are sacrifices because life is really busy and parents have those same challenges.
Well, they are, in the sense of yes and no, because I don't have to do that. But because I have enough players. But if I don't, a boy isn't going to get to the game. And he's going to miss out, and that's unfair on him.
Yeah.
And we could win without him. We might lose without him, but that ain't the point. Just because his family aren't as committed to the team as all the other parents, that's not his fault. You know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, absolutely.
And as manager, I'm not going to ask anyone else to do it, so I'll do it. You know.
Fair enough.
So, it is a challenge, but I just got to make sure I leave it earlier and. I'm not very good at leaving earlier.
No, it's a challenge. But some of the there's lots of places where actually it's all right there, particularly for us in kind of based out of Keynsham, places which are just off the ring road.
Mm.
Oh, they're just a dream. Mm. They are an absolute dream. You can leave it till the last possible minute to roll out of the house and rock up the ring road. But some of the by and large, actually, I found the quality of I thought about this earlier on. What the kind of fundamentals that you actually want when you turn up to play a game of football with kids? There was one surprising one, actually, that I did think of. But you just, ideally, you just want a surface. Some kind with the grass cut, as few distractions as possible. Again, you, some talk on previous podcasts, we're blessed in many ways and cursed in others that we have a railway line with plenty of distractions that runs.
Balloons landing,
everything else that goes on around here. Paddleboarding when it floods. Whereas a particular highlight on a pitch which was all right, it was absolutely fine, but it had an anthill on it, and there were two of our players during this match, again to follow on from topic on a previous pod, who found that anthill pretty fascinating.
Yes.
During the match, repeatedly, and at great length.
But bear in mind, they're at the age where we've got one player who had a tattoo, a temporary tattoo on her arm, and was stopping during the game because she couldn't scratch it off. So Ryan Tills are going to distract them. If they're at a stage where I'm stopping on the pitch because I can't get this temporary tattoo off my arm, to the point that players are running past them, then anthills are definitely going to distract them.
They really are. But what I have found, actually, is that we haven't really come across anywhere which has kind of been really disappointing or kind of bordered on kind of unsanitary. I'm thinking about, where, because people walk dogs.
There are a few. We haven't yet. I mean, there's one known as the jungle in Boardwalk. That is one where you do have to walk the pitches. That's been known for it. I've never been there, actually.
So that is what. So the jungle in Broadwalk is where I played my school, my primary school football matches.
Right, so that's one that's Broadwalk. Known for having
it
dogs.
It certainly was then.
Yes. So yeah, there's one. I've been very lucky that I've never played there with my team, but other teams within our club have, and they've talked about that on many occasions. We as a club have sometimes played at Manor Road in Keynsham because this place is flooded, and it is, although it's got pitches there, it's an open park.
So
we have to do the walk ourselves and do that.
Yeah.
And you may miss it. So that happens. And any council pitch, which is also a park, you know, the manager has to walk it. It depends how lucky you are.
Yeah, indeed.
And also, there's also the other thing to consider. Some weeks we're lucky because our five away matches in a row are Whitchurch, Imperial, Bitton, Longwell Green, and Wormley.
Yeah.
You could also get our five away matches in a row are Thornbury, Western Crusaders, Portishead, Avon Athletic, and Minehead in the Somerset Cup. At some stage you're going to enter the Somerset Cup, and my first team, we had Minehead in one of them. My last team, we went down to Taunton in the Somerset Cup.
Wow.
So once you enter the County Cup, if you're away, you can have some really good, nice little jaunts, as it were. So that can get quite fun. And then the pitch quality, it can vary. We played a semi-final in my first team, and it ended up being on down in Yeovil. The people who make aerospace was Westland. It was their pitches. It was lovely, and then we also played on the Sun Life pitches, which is like the local version of Wembley. Up in North Bristol, we played on those.
And then other times
you go away. And in fact, it was in the under-14 version of this year, 2 years ago, my team, and we went down to somewhere in Somerset, Avershays maybe, and the pitch wasn't dirty or anything, but it was a hill. it was on a hill because that was their pitch.
Yeah,
and you're like, and it was getting darker and darker. We went to penalties. It was getting darker. We weren't at penalties, but we're like, wow. And we drove home in the dark. From all of it. So you get some experiences as you get old, especially if you enter the County Cups. They're quite fun to do, but you can get some real experiences. So it can be quite interesting the older you get as well.
Got all this to look forward to.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and again, to what we were talking about. Definitely, absolutely 2 weeks ago, it just completely hooked, absolutely completely gripped by that's the next kind of what they under eight. So we're talking another 8 years through to we go through to adult football.
Yeah, absolutely.
The
memories I have looking back on some of the things. I mean, I've been lucky because I've got three teams that are back on already, and hopefully now a fourth one, but the memories of different things, like going to Minehead with my first team in the County Cup as under-14s, and we're sat in the changing rooms, and people walk past with tree trunk legs, and we're like, we're not playing them, that must be adults. And we line up against them on the pitch, we're like, oh my God, what's happening here? We actually won 8-0. They were big, but they were useless.
That was about it.
But sat in the changing room as they walked past, because my lap were quite small. You know, that initial impression was like, oh no. Yeah. But you know, the things you see and do as you get on. But also things like going on tour. My 16s had just come back from Holland.
Yeah,
my last team, we did the same tour to Holland. But my last team, we also went 3 years running to a holiday camp for like for a long weekend or for the Monday to Friday. And found oppositions to play down there, and actually took had a week's holiday down there, and did that sort of thing, and all those sort of things you can do as a team. So things to look forward to. If there's enough people interested in doing it, well worth doing. But again, fun enough, we're digressing here. So and this, but they're fun enough. They're not. That's also not mentioned in the level one coaching course touring. So but let's get back to that. The league. You want to talk about the league? I think
the league.
Before we do. Fire Club JFC are involved in Bristol Girls League, Hannah Minor League, Avon Youth League, the Bristol Saturday Youth League, the Under 18 Combination, and now the Bristol Casuals League with the women. Those are all the leagues we're involved in, just so for context. But for our point of view, we are in the Bristol Girls League.
Bristol Girls League. And actually, so the trickiest thing I found in this respect, right at the start, and I now have saved, not even saved as a favourite, but it is a page which is always open on the internet browser on my phone, is the fixtures and results page.
Trying to navigate through full time
to find the right geographic area of the country and the right age group, because it doesn't always line up.
No, that's right.
And then, are we League A or are we League B? And all that to try and navigate your way down to the teams.
FA full time is good once you've got the right page open.
Agreed. Which, as I said, I just constantly have open.
I mean, I'm a little bit annoyed they did lock it down, because I run the historic website, and for years you could go in and get feeds, and so I'd go into every team you run, find their team, and go, right, I want the feed for that league table and the feed for their results for like the last 2 weeks, and I put it on the individual pages. And then about 7 years ago, that ability was taken off for people. I think you can get it if you're certain administrative rights, but
it's not just open access,
to have a feed. They just took it away, and that's quite frustrating, because I would just put it on the website, so anyone can just go on the website page and look at it. Now you've got to have certain rights to have it and all sorts, and this is quite frustrating, really. So you can't now have it just available on like various websites.
That's frustrating.
Yeah. But the actual thing itself is quite good.
So we're in the Bristol Girls League.
Yes.
And our results and the league table aren't published.
They're not.
Because we're of a certain age. Quite understandable.
But that's across the board. That's
indeed. Yeah, that's not just us.
Yeah, for context, Hannah Minor League, which is the same age as us, but boys or mixed, it's the same. They're not published until under 12, I think it is.
Yeah, I have 12 or 13.
Either 12 or 13, but that's when they're published. Yeah.
Indeed. So, in that...
Under 12.
Yes.
So in... Well, high school. Senior school.
That makes sense. Mm. Yeah. Year sevens. Yeah, there you go. So, in that context then, how is the... This was always something that interested me, particularly at the start of the year. How do you divvy up between a Premier League and a Championship, an A League and a B League, a top division, a bottom division? And how do you do that?
At the very start.
Do you do that at the end of... Will we do that at the end of the season? Will we have some promotion and relegation at the end of this season?
Basically, when it was done, is at the start of the season, obviously we had... Were you here for the under-7 tournament at Portishead back in February? Where we went down to Portishead. It was just under... Sevens.
No, I don't think so, because I remember it being quite a nice hot day, and that's not February.
No. So, Portishead sort of historically run a tournament just for one age group, and it's kind of like the girls then.
Ah.
And there were about 10 teams down there. I say 10 teams, we were one, but like Downend had two, Longwell had two, as in they took all their girls down. And so I knew straight away that most teams were beating us. So then we had tournaments, and I'm saying, okay, we're getting on okay with Emerson's, and we're getting on okay with Bradley Stoke, but these other teams like Downend and Longwell, they're clearly beating us. Mm. So come the summer, when it's like, okay, what division do you want to be in? And there's probably going to be two. I said, I'd like to be in two, please.
Okay.
So you already know through, luckily that there's tournament, but other tournaments as the summer goes on.
So it was you got to...
The teams say which division you want to be in. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
And it's generally worked out okay.
Yeah.
I think...
Hard to know when the results aren't published, of course.
Well, no, but the league knows.
Yeah, the league knows.
I think there may be one... Potential one team in the A division, maybe I've got that wrong. Yeah. I won't name them but we're playing them soon. But generally, I think that's how it's done. And because they play each other, you play each other in tournaments, you get to know each other. It's harder, I think, in the Hannah Minor League, only because, like in the girls, there's 16 of us across the two divisions. The Hannah Minor League, under sevens, where they haven't even started doing tournaments at that point, there's usually about 40 or 50 teams, and they've got to set themselves up as divisions. So I think they find it a lot harder there, whereas the girls, because there's a lot less of us, most of us know our level already. And then next year they'll have new teams coming in, and we've played some in friendly, so we know, like, we've played Winscombe,
Would Timsbury going to come in?
I think Tisbury looking to come in, yeah. I think Long Ashton looking to come in. We've got about a week's time. So they're looking to come in. So they'll probably look to go into the C division. There'll be a C division next year.
Oh, brill. Oh, that's good. Is that existing teams having like an A and a B team as well?
Not necessarily, but as in teams coming in.
Wow. I've done that, but that's great that there's enough of them to justify that's fantastic.
These tend to grow in the early stages, and then they'll shrink down again, come about under 13 upwards.
Yeah,
in the early stages they do tend to grow, and then, like I said, there'll be one or two teams who've probably dominated our division who might want to go up to the A, and maybe one, maybe two, I don't know, in the A who say, can we come down?
Is that a choice again then, every... They'll obviously become a point where...
Well, if two teams want to go up to the A and no one wants to come down, then the Bristol Girls League have all got a decision to make. Really, haven't they? And if both those teams have absolutely dominated and it's been a fairly even A division, who do you put down? But if two teams have dominated and one team's been hammered, they might just say to that one team, look, you do need to go down, and we'll put the two up. And I don't know how they'll do it exactly, because they've got... Whereas later on, there's clear relegation and promotion.
Yeah, that was again.
Well, I think next year, at the end of this year coming, it probably will be, because then you start to settle down. Even though results aren't published, once you're in, this is the first year. Yeah. But next year, results should settle down, and we'll start again. Even though it's not published, there should be start getting relegation and promotion. And of course, you also know, because of the cup competitions, and they do publish those results. They're allowed to publish the cup results.
Yes.
And so they know from that we've played these A division teams, and yes, we didn't get anywhere near as close to the A division teams as we do in the B division games. So they know that if we said we want to go in the A division, they'll go, well, hold on, you played those two teams and look what happened. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. and we go to that saying, but we wouldn't want to do that.
But I could also say, well, actually, we played them and they put five on the pitch and made one sub with 5 minutes to go. I put five on the pitch and then I had three subs and was rotating every 5 minutes. You also got to take it in context as well. So, I mean, Mark talks about the cup semi-final where he felt that my decision cost us 2 years ago, because with 15 minutes to go, I brought on a sub who probably shouldn't have come on. And it was 0-0 at the time. And then
I think I heard
they got a goal, and then we were pushing, and they got another goal with like three to go. And with 2 minutes to go, he brought on a sub who hadn't come on.
Yep.
Yeah. And that was the difference. Whereas me, 15 to go, I was like, I have to bring this lad on. He's come. I've got him. And even 15, I felt really guilty. And yet, he wasn't strong enough. Whether he cost us the game, I don't know. Probably didn't. But we were competing at that point. So there were the game. But now, even now, you know, you play some matches where you clearly see these. And I'm in WhatsApp group, and there are some WhatsApp groups where the under 8 teams moan and say, are you somebody who's going to insist on keeping all your teams on if you're beating us easily? I'm like, no, of course not. I'll change it. You know, you can bring an extra player on if you need to. I don't care. The result, I'm not worried about winning or losing. I want a competitive match. If we're beating you easily, in fact, we've had it on our WhatsApp group, haven't we? About
we've just been having that conversation.
What's it? Not, it's not the mercy rule, because the mercy rule is, for the listeners, the mercy rule is, if they get 10 goals up, they power play. It's called power play. If they get 10 goals up in the mercy rule, the opposition have the right to say, that's it, we're done. Even if that's 5 minutes into the game, they can say, we're done. Game's over. We're not going to carry on playing because it's going to absolutely demoralise the team.
Yeah.
And now you've got two choices at that point. Walk away, or what you could also do is say, right, we'll take five of your players and five of our players and we'll mix them up and play a much more fun match.
A development game.
Development game, yeah. But with five of each team, five of each mixed in.
Yeah.
And teams have done that. I know others have said, oh, well, fine, go away then. I'd much rather, if that had happened to me and I was winning 10-0 after 5 minutes and someone said that and I said, well, should we mix them up? I'd rather do that and have a fun match that at least gives everyone a game.
Yeah.
So the power play rule, yeah. So the power play game rule is, if you're playing a match and you go four goals clear, the opposition can bring another player on. If you go another two goals clear, they can bring another player on. I don't know if it stands another two goals as another player or not.
I don't think so, but then it drops back as well.
If the score comes back again to within four goals, the first player comes off, and so on and so forth. Yeah.
Yeah, indeed, yeah.
And the league are looking at it, apparently. The Girls League are considering it as an option. And I think that's brilliant. I've done that back to my first team. Right back to the first boys team.
And that's why I've
offered it.
Indeed, and that's why I was surprised that it wasn't already a thing, because it feels, again, it'd be really new into this from a rules and administrative perspective. It feels like that's a common sense.
Yes.
But also it's done. You know, we've done that.
This is the problem where I think we've still got hangover, which I don't think you'll find on the continent, of we got to win. No, you haven't. You're developing people. You're trying to develop both teams. You know, my very first game with this team, my under 16 boys,
yep,
we lost 26-1. 26-1. And
how good was the one?
It's a good goal.
Yeah.
But, you know, 26. Not once did they look at us and say, because we'd started 1 week before the end of the under six season, because we were really struggling with numbers, and I'd gone into schools and got players. Most teams have started at the start of the under five season, so we played 2 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we started. We trained through the summer, had a break for summer holidays, and then we're into games. So essentially, we'd been playing 2 months at most.
Yeah,
against teams we've been together 2 years. And this team, by the way, ended in the first division. When division started, they were in the first, as it turned out.
I'm not surprised.
The interesting was, though, halfway through the under eight season, we beat them 3-2. We actually managed to beat them. We'd improved massively.
Is that down to your exemplary coaching skills?
Oh, I have no idea. I mean, unfortunately, players who I had have slowly been picked off by other teams, and we've come back down to the fourth division. But not once in that game did he say, look, we're clearly better. You've got subs. Dropping another one on.
Yeah, it was just, no, we'll just keep going. Just like, goal, go again,
yeah,
go goal, again, go
yeah,
again.
you score, yeah, you score. And it's like, really? And straight away, I was like, this is pointless. But the same year, we're beating another team. We're five up. And I was like, to the manager, do you want to bring another player on? He's like, oh, can I? Yeah, of course you can.
And that's a really good learning point as well for myself, where one of the more recent games we've had, which kind of was the genesis of that group conversation that we've had on the WhatsApp over the past week or so, was that the opposition were scoring unanswered goal after unanswered goal. I don't think it was as one-sided as the scoreline suggested. But at no point, even though we've done it, because I was so wrapped up in the match itself, did I think, oh, hang on a minute, in the past, we've offered to other teams, yeah. So actually we're getting a bit ahead, would you like to put an extra player on? Oh, thanks very much indeed, yeah, absolutely. Or, as we've kind of discussed a little bit on that group, some coaches will say, no, we win or we lose, but we play five players and we will learn to do that yeah. way, thank you very much, and that's fine. But not once did it cross my mind, and yet now it will, yeah. every single time, which is why it was so surprising that it wasn't a rule to start with. But great also that the league have kind of really acted on it quite quickly, just from a Genesis conversation on a WhatsApp group that might now become a league rule for next year. That's great.
But I mean, I think you mentioned on a previous part when we discussed this before, me and Mark, and he said that at least two coaches have got quite offended when he's mentioned it to them, the offer. And I said on that, I actually said, if those who've listened to it, I don't care. I don't care if I hurt your feelings. It's not about you. Take you out
it's
of
about
it.
About the kids.
It's the kids. Yeah. It's their development. It's their welfare. I couldn't give a damn about you. It's them.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Okay, we've got about 10 minutes left. Anything? Where are we up to now?
10 minutes left. Well, I did run through all of our away locations through this year. But we've kind of covered them.
Okay.
To be honest, we've kind of covered them. I think if I could flip it for the last few minutes, mm-hmm. And ask from your perspective what you see, because I've got a few ideas in my head that I've seen. And apologies, listeners, be very focused on the under eight girls now for the last couple of minutes of this. But what you've seen change over the course of this season, which we've nearly finished, yes. even though we've got a backlog of fixtures.
Even though we've got 84 matches in 85 days.
Really intense round of fixtures. So no training time, effectively, until we've finished the league season now. But what's the biggest kind of development leap you've seen as a collective? I don't want to dig out individuals, talk about individuals, but as a collective that you've seen for the whole club, I suppose, either from the coaches, from the girls, from a tactical perspective, technical perspective, and how does that compare to, because this is, as it's been mentioned many times on this pod, not your first rodeo, and how that compares to previous iterations.
Comparing it is going to be difficult, only because each comparison is about 11 years apart. So trying to remember that is quite difficult. Tactical leaps, actually, the eye-opener for me was the first seven-a-side game. The difference in our girls, from five-a-side to seven-a-side, where suddenly there was so much more space, and one or two girls aside, they weren't chasing. It was like, oh, they've listened. They're not... Because I see teams under 9 and under 10 where they're all chasing the ball, like they've got to crowd it. And a lot of our girls weren't doing that, and they were using the space. And in that game, we played an A division side.
We did.
And yeah, we did lose in the end, but it wasn't a hammering at all. I think it was only four goals, wasn't it? Four goals in 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And we were passing the ball around well, and I wouldn't say we put them under a lot of pressure. We did in the first 10 minutes. But after that, they probably dominated possession. But not to the extent that we were under pressure on our goal. You know, they had the ball and then we'd win it back and we'd pass it around ourselves. Mm. But it wasn't like we were just chasing and chasing. One or two of our girls, did, and we've got to work with those. But a lot of them were holding their position, and when they got the ball, they were looking to pass it. And they were not just pass it forward. We've asked them to pass and keep possession, and there were a couple of passing back to a keeper and passing across someone. And you say you don't pass across your own goal. I disagree. You don't pass across your own goal when you're under pressure. You look at any elite level team, they pass across their goal all the time.
They do.
So what you mean is, no, kids, don't do it because you think you're going to lose it. Well, no, have faith in your team And also, if you lose, you lose. It's a learning thing.
Yeah.
So that was a great tactical eye-opener for me.
And I noticed, I really noticed that, Luke. You mentioned Portishead tournament, and we talked a bit earlier on about the other tournaments that we did last summer. Got a great program this summer as well. Mm. Can't wait. But the leap that I've seen in just positional sense and discipline and what comes across or feels like is really straightforward stuff, like where you should be when you're a defender relative to where the ball is on the pitch and where players are on the pitch. And sure, there's the odd reminder that you need to give, but actually we don't need to, again, a topic of conversation on a previous pod, we do not need to stand and point and tell players where to be.
No.
Even at under eight, which is really fantastic, that development that they've all shown, and that is without exception, actually, through the year, has been just awesome. Fantastic.
Another thing I noticed, and this is a bit of a shame, is that there's a very developed girl who plays for another team within our club, and she's played for us once or twice. And when she plays for us, you see the other girls respond with confidence.
Yep.
And it's amazing what that extra sort of strength and development of a player in the middle or in defence, wherever yep. this girl plays,
yep.
the others react, and it's almost like, oh, that's how you do it. Okay, and it's amazing what that brings to them.
Good players lift other players, don't
it
they?
It absolutely does. Yeah. And so it's a shame that she's not playing for us, but that we have to live with that. But when she does, it's great to see our players learn from it and not just go, oh, you're here, you can do it.
Well,
it's,
quite,
they're
yeah.
not letting her. They're not letting her do it. It's like, okay, we can learn from you, we can react from that. And they all lift their game too. And that's a really good thing as well. I like that. I like seeing that when that happens.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I'd echo that. And in fact, the referenced earlier on as well, that we have a really great, balanced, diverse group of girls who we to the extent we don't rely on one player or two players. They're a great team, and they've really built that over the past year. It's been fascinating to watch it.
And then the other thing I like, finally, you go back to the start of the season, and we say, oh, you need to do this and this and this, and sometimes they'd be a bit confused, but as the season's gone on, they've listened more, and they'll question, and hands will go up, and sometimes the hand will go up because I saw a dog yesterday. But quite often,
enough about you, Andy. What about the girls?
But quite often, the hand will go up, and it'll be a question about the game or a question about something.
Absolutely.
And they're learning and they're listening. And there's still one or two who are not paying attention, but more of the girls, as the season has gone on, have paid attention.
Yep.
And we've asked them to do something, and having the tactics board has helped. And you know, you look around, and some of them, they're just playing with the tactics board, putting little colours on it, which is quite nice anyway. But they are listening, and they are responding to the direction we're trying to give them. And as a group, that I think is a great thing as well. So I think those are the sort of three things I've noticed and I've liked to see, certainly this season, from the team.
Yeah, I'd echo all that. And the big one that has really resonated with me, that I've kind of learnt, I suppose, amongst all of that, plus everything else, is that I can't rush it. Mm. So what I would, it'd be the ideal, wouldn't it, is if we could say, this is the formation for today, and everybody plays out of their skin, and it's perfect. Doesn't work in elite football, doesn't work with under eight girls, or at any age group in between. And I think from the conversations that I've had with other coaches currently, as I say, only got less than a year's experience of this, other coaches, other age groups around the club, is that a lot of the challenges that they face developmentally around positioning, focus, concentration, going again, because it's one of the things we've been trying to learn over the, focus on particularly over the past couple of weeks, is once you've tried it once, don't stop, go again. Say the same thing to adult football, don't stand and watch a pass, go into, move into space, that kind of stuff. That, I can't rush that, and I can't get frustrated, it's really hard not to, when that doesn't come a week after we've started teaching it.
Yeah.
Seeing that fantastic development through this year, but I know that we will still see some of those challenges up through the next 2 or 3 year groups as well.
On that, I may be misquoting here. I think it was either von Moltke or one of his Prussian army peers who said, no plan survives first contact. And that's exactly it with football. You lay them out, this is what we're going to do, and they kick off, and it's first contact.
Yeah.
Every plan goes out the window. And that's what we always have to remember, whether it's our girls, whether it's my under-16 boys, whatever the plan is, the first contact and the plan goes out the window.
Yeah.
And that's it. But okay, I think we're coming to an end. Anything else you want to add?
No, we've done more than enough. It's in two consecutive weeks. It was great to be here a fortnight ago.
It was, and thanks for coming back. I appreciate it. Oddly enough, wearing the same clothes, both of us as well.
I have showered and washed my clothes in between. I promise. This is not a video. Also, video recorded podcast.
No, which is a good thing, really, isn't it?
I quite agree.
Okay. All right. On that note, Simon, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
And listeners, I hope you enjoyed that one. And listen out for the next pod when it comes along. Thank you all very much.
If you like this podcast, then please email us your questions, comments, random thoughts, anything you want to share with us at greengreengrassroots@gmail.com. You can contact Mark and Andy through X at FryClubJFC or Ben at RedFalconJFC, on Facebook via FryClubJuniorFC or RedFalconSport. The FryClubJFC website is www.fryclubjfc.co.uk and the Red Falcon Insta page is at RedFalconJFC. You could also type out a fantastic review on Apple Podcasts or give us 5 stars on Spotify. You've been listening to a We Haven't Got a Clue What We're Doing production, produced and edited by Andy Glover.